was like our series of educating brand managers. There has to be a way for us to reverse engineer and break this down into bite-sized, easy-to-digest reports. It was so important for them to understand that this is what's happening in your brand, this is how they're doing it, and this is how you can do it as well.
Hello and welcome back to the Women of Web3 podcast. I'm Lauren Ingram and I'm the founder of Women of Web3. We're a community and a consultancy, and we've been educating thousands of women about Web3 and sharing jobs, events, and learning resources like this podcast. In every episode, I'll be interviewing an incredible leader about their learnings. We start off by breaking down the Web3 jargon, then we head deeper down the rabbit hole. Please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps more people find the podcast. Now, you're probably listening to this podcast because you want to learn about Web3, but have you ever considered how to actually use it in your job? At MDRX, they build digital products using Web3, blockchain, machine learning, and AI, but with purpose as the foundation, never just tech for tech's sake. So why not download their cheat sheet? It's packed with top tips on why your business should give a damn about Web3 and see whether Web3 is actually right for you in your job, your business, or even your career. So whether you're looking to optimize your business strategy or leverage tech to stay ahead of the competition, MDRX have got you covered. I'm really excited to be working with them because they live and breathe Web3, and I love that they see tech as an enabler and not as the end goal. And because they're the tech consultancy arm of law firm Mishkon de Rea Group, they know everything there is to know about the legalities of Web3. And if you've ever tried to launch a legally compliant NFT project, DAO, anything like that, you'll know it's really complex and you need a trusted partner. Go and download their cheat sheet now by clicking on the link in the description. Now, alongside running Women of Web3, I thought, why not start another business to make sure I really have no time? So I've co-founded The Sidechain with Bex Perfect, and it's Web3 and AI education for founders and freelancers. Part of my thinking is that I want to keep Women of Web3 free for our community, which does mean we're slightly at the mercy of whether brands have budget so that we can offer these learning resources, the podcast, etc., for free. So The Sidechain is something different, it's separate, it's a paid for product, and it's aimed at small businesses. And that's going to be a series of courses and downloadables so you can learn about Web3 and AI to future-proof yourself and your business. So if you want to learn more, find us on LinkedIn, we're The Sidechain, or on Instagram and Twitter, we're at Studio Sidechain. Also, so this is now the last episode of season two. Sad times, but we're super excited to be back in October with some amazing guests for season three. So on to today's guest. Ipshita Kumar has had a really interesting career so far. She started out in hospitality, later co-founded a tech-powered events business, and now she's VP of Brand Innovation at Hype Partners. They are a Web3 marketing agency where they work with massive brands. She is so articulate about Web3 and relating it to our real lives. I was pretty blown away, actually. So I think you'll really enjoy this episode. So without further ado, here's Ipshita. So welcome to the show, Ipshita. Could you tell me a bit about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. Very nice to be here, Lauren, especially that we've been connected for a while now. So it's a pleasure. I'm Ipshita. I'm the Vice President of Brand Innovation at Hype, which is one of the leading Web3 marketing agencies in the industry. Outside of Hype, I'm also the co-founder of Lemonade, which is, as of today, a platform that enables creators of all sizes to build communities online, offline, on-chain. At scale.
Amazing. So we always kick things off with a bit of a jargon buster because people seem to get a lot out of that. So how would we describe what we mean by a bear market?
Interesting one. So historically, if you look up like in the stock exchange, bear market has meant like when essentially the entire portfolio or the entire market is down by, let's say, 20%, people are liquidating their stocks, which means that they're selling their shares because they want to get access to the liquid money. It also means that it creates a lot of fear and uncertainty within the community and then also investors. Then if you also look at like the greed and fear index, it will gear more towards the fear side. Now, when you take the same concept back to Web3, because the nature of most Web3 projects and businesses is ownership. And from the start, you are in fact giving ownership to your entire community in the form of tokens or coins. In that case, bear market would essentially kind of have a much larger impact because you're not a traditional company that went IPO. You, from ground up, were built by the community and who have equal ownership. So when you do have a bear market, the fear sentiment kicks in much harder. The community starts to react to it more aggressively, and they're wanting to get more liquidity from the funds that are locked in different projects. Now, the other school of thought, or the one that I like to prefer, because I'm more of a visual learner, is when you look at, when you think of a bear, it's kind of like you're thinking about hibernation. And that's why a lot of times you see in Web3 people say bear market is for builders. So when you're in hibernation mode, essentially you're spending a lot of time in refining your existing processes, refining your product, building your product, because a lot of projects still don't have a product in the market. So you take this time, this downtime, to really kind of refine your value proposition, finding the perfect target audience, and being ready for the bull run. We are doing actually very similar within the marketing agency. So this is the perfect time for us to think about what are the processes that we're lacking in? What are the gaps that we can kind of fix during this time? How do we, as an agency, future-proof ourselves for the bull run? What would that bull run look like? And what would projects want? What kind of services would they need to successfully launch in the market? So yeah, it's essentially the downtime, the hibernation stage, where everyone's kind of thinking of refining their processes. But yeah, economically essentially means that the market's not doing well. The stock prices have gone down by 20% and the community is essentially looking to liquidate their shares.
This is so good. Thank you. I feel like I need to like ask you more definitions because you gave it so much helpful context. Because like, It's something that can be defined in a sort of simplified way or like oversimplified way as to the kind of, you know, market is down. That's how I tend to sort of abbreviate it. But actually, it's so helpful hearing that context, because when people talk about building in the bear or even just having that sort of, you know, economic background, I think actually quite a lot of people in Web3 don't realize that it is a term also used in the sort of finance sector as well, is, you know, bear market. I remember being taught it a few years ago, and to remember the sort of difference between a bear and bull, like just remember getting the words the right way around, is to bear down. It's just like a helpful little, sort of, not mnemonic, but, you know, for remembering it. So I remember just sort of seeing talk about the bull market for ages when I sort of was first in this Web3 space, and like everyone talking about being bullish, and I was like, what is going on? But that's, yeah, super, super helpful. And genuinely, I want to like ask you to define more stuff, because that was really, really helpful. But first, I want to hear more about your career. So I think you started out in marketing for sort of resorts, like vacations, and you later co-founded Lemonade that you mentioned, and then you ended up at Hype Partners. So I'd love to hear a bit about your career journey so far, and then what's motivated you at each stage.
For sure. I'd say like my career has been anything but conventional. And I would say that's a bit weird, considering my background. I'm South Asian. I was born and raised in India. So there's really very specific types of careers you should choose, which is either, you know, you go into medical, you go into law, or you go into engineering, which is, you know, like more on the tech side. But hospitality is just something that was just unheard of, because the first thing you think of is, but Why do you want to go to hospitality? There's just so many more lucrative career options, and it's an industry that doesn't even pay you well. But I've always been attracted to just how the hospitality and tourism industry has the power of influencing an individual's holiday, special moment. Even think about it like this. When you're having a bad day, the first place you think of going, I'm going to go have a beer with a friend of mine. And where do you go have a beer? At a bar. And a bar is, again, a part of the hospitality industry, right? So whenever you want to celebrate your birthday, or there's a big proposal coming in, it's Mother's Day. Think of all the most important, sad as well as happy moments that you've had. You've ended up somehow spending it around the hospitality area, even if you're ordering food in. It's a part of hospitality, right? Because it's food and beverage. So it just plays such an important role in an individual's day that I really wanted to be a part of the industry. So I studied hospitality in Marbella in Spain, La Roche, and then I went ahead and I started working for Marriott. So I worked for Ritz-Carlton, Renaissance, and then Marriott, the actual brand itself. And then I also worked in Dubai for about 9 months at Atlantis Le Palm. And all these hotels, I was mostly in F&B marketing, because again, food and beverage was something that I was very passionate about. And it was very interesting to see how we can market restaurants, the chefs, and then even like curating the menu. So that entire journey was fun. It was very fulfilling, but I had a question to myself. I was 21 back then, and I was thinking, I can order food at the touch of a button. I can order cabs at a touch of a button. I can even swipe and go on date with whoever I want, but I cannot find a single hotel that I'm working at, which are five-star hotels, have mobile check-in. So as an industry, hospitality has been always kind of on the back foot when it comes to technology and new tech integration, which kind of led me to think, okay, maybe this is an industry I'd love to come back to later. But for now, I'd like to be somewhere which is tech first. So I went ahead, joined Hosco, which is still, as of today, think of it like the LinkedIn, but for hospitality. So really like a closed network of hospitality graduates, again, that allows hotels to hire the best in class. And then I moved on to co-founding Lemonade with my co-founders, who were back then my roommates in Barcelona. And when we started off, it was more of an offline events platform that allowed creators of any industry, so you could be a chef, you could be a musician, you could be a painter, so any creator of that sort could essentially download the app, get themselves verified as a creator, and then collaborate with different homeowners who have a vacant living room to create intimate experiences. So again, linking hospitality to a point and then tech. So we started building that. And just before pandemic, we were about to raise our first round. Yeah, everything kind of, the first lockdown took place. And obviously, offline events were no longer going to be a thing. So no one wanted to put in money for a business where they have zero visibility on the ROI. It was a scary part because we had all essentially quit our full-time jobs a month before the first lockdown to be able to do Lemonade full time. That's when our journey started from an offline events platform to an online events platform, and then moving on to today, which essentially allows any creator to be able to build communities and host events, set up a store at scale. It could be on-chain or off-chain as well. So from the beginning, our North Star has always been the creators. So as a tech infrastructure or platform, we've always wanted to build features that enables creators to just be able to spend less time on juggling platforms and spend more time creating. So if you can essentially kind of build your community in one place, sell your tickets in the same place, set up your pop-up shop, sell your NFTs, everything within one platform, and at the same time own that community, then you as a creator are spending less time on multiple platforms trying to distribute your content and trying to make content, but instead you're just spending time creating, which is what I'd say like this biggest challenge for creators today. Sorry, that was a sidetrack. And then at the end of 2021 is when I joined Hype Partners as their head of NFTs. Back then, Hype was already in the market and going strong for the last 5 years. My role was to kind of look at how can we create a value proposition for NFT marketing within the agency. And as of today, my role is kind of like extended more towards innovation, where we look at technologies like NFTs, gaming, metaverse, AR, VR, to really enable brands to understand what these technologies are and how they can integrate it into their entire brand ecosystem, into the product ecosystem that will help them connect back with their customers in a more engaging way.
Super interesting. So in your role now as VP of Brand Innovation, so tell me a bit about what Hype does, what Hype Partners does in a sort of broader way, and then what you're responsible for now that your role has evolved.
So Hype is one of the leading marketing agencies within the Web3 industry today. They've been around for the last 5 years, and traditionally they've worked with the top 100 crypto projects till date. So think of Ledger, think of Chili's, Polygon, BNB. So pretty much like the bigger crypto projects. My role was to look at how can NFTs as a service offering fit in to what Hype was already providing, which is anywhere from creative to social to paid marketing to community building to community management, all the way down to out-of-home activations for larger companies. And like I mentioned earlier, today it's more about thinking of, okay, NFTs, metaverse, gaming, AR, VR, how can we look at these suites of tools and empower brands to understand them in a jargon-free way, so that they can inculcate these technologies into their product roadmap to be able to connect with consumers better.
Really cool. And also great use of inculcate. I'm really enjoying this. I really like the way you frame this stuff as to, including what you're talking about, the sort of demystification piece of like, that's what brands need to understand and they need partners in this space. So what kind of projects are you working on at Hype, or like, or what are some of the biggest projects to date?
Yes, I can talk one about a client, and another one which is very similar to what you're doing at Women of Web3 is demystifying the world of Web3. So we're currently working with a portfolio brand of Pernod Ricard in the alcobev industry to really help them understand what does their entrance in Web3 look like. So they are what I call them is a Web3 virgin brand, but they've been around for over 100 years in the market, and our role right now is to look at their entire suite of products and all the activations I've done over the last 10, 15 years. And just to understand, how do you take what they already have and bring it on chain? We're not going to create anything new from ground up. We're just going to extend your brand identity on chain. And how do we do that? What does that roadmap look like? And then once that strategy is kind of approved by their team, we will then go ahead and kind of execute. So what I love about this specific, I'd say like the part of my role today, is that it really allows us to, like you said, demystify the world of Web3. I have a friend who actually told me something in an ECC a couple of weeks ago, that when you spend too much time with Jesus, what's the next step you want to do? Go and preach. So we feel that we've been building and being so close within our Web3 ecosystem and creating more jargon and making the industry so much more harder to reach, that now we need to kind of take a step back, go back to your traditional businesses and help take all the learnings and apply it there. So that's where I really enjoy the part of my role. And last year was when my team launched Hype Research. So Hype Research was born because as I was going through LinkedIn, I noticed, again, one brand after the other, from Nike to Adidas to Budweiser, everyone was doing something in the NFT space. This was like last bull run. And then I would see a lot of the people that I was following breaking it down in terms of, oh, Nike made X amount of sales, or Adidas did this crazy activation, and they dressed up a Bored Ape. And like, there was a lot of information overload. For those who work in Web3 marketing, they understood. But I thought that, how is it that, let's say, a brand manager of Adidas sitting out of, let's say, India, who's a regional head, able to understand or even demystify what he's reading on LinkedIn? There has to be a way for us to reverse engineer and break this down into bite-sized, easy-to-digest reports. So that's when we launched Hype Research. We focused on 7 brands across 7 months. We reverse-engineered their entrance in Web3 and really looked at, from a strategic point of view, that is, what strategy they used, how did they build their community, how did they scale it, what did they do right, what did they do wrong, how can they improve? So this was like our series of educating brand managers. So that was a part I feel really helped in, yeah, making the space a bit more accessible, because I do feel that we spend way too much time around jargon. And it's time to just kind of leave it on the back end.
100%. Yeah, I feel like we need to talk more, because I feel like we're definitely very aligned on that kind of thing. I really like that idea of reverse engineering what people's Web3 strategies are, being like, okay, if you look at the results, when we sort of trace that back, what were they trying to do here? Were they successful in it?
Because when you see numbers like 10 million, well, it's a big number. And all the regional heads would be thinking, oh, how did they get that number? And they don't know, because they're maybe too far away from what we call Web3 today, or like NFTs. So it just was so important for them to understand that this is what's happening in your brand. This is how they're doing it. And this is how you can do it as well. So yeah, I agree with you.
So what kind of sentiment are you seeing around Web3 from brands at the moment? Because I feel like that's something that we're being asked quite a bit of, kind of like, not quite as extreme as like, is Web3 over? But that, you know, there has been like some negative sentiment around it. And yeah, people also like to ask in a slightly gleeful way of like, oh, has AI not like taken over everything already? You know, presumably you'll stop being asked about Web3 by now, which isn't the case, but there certainly is some like churn and change. What are you finding in terms of like the kind of briefs that are coming in, or like how brands are responding at the moment?
I would even like categorize them into two sides, right? So you have brands like Pernod Ricard, for example. They come in with an understanding of, yes, we know the space is booming. We know we need to adopt this technology at some point. We just don't know how. Can you help us with the know-how, with the research? And a lot of times, what I feel that brands, or a lot of times what people in general forget, is sometimes you just need to spend a lot of time doing research and strategy work before you can just jump in and just do this crazy NFT activation, or just launch a 5,000 collection for your community. You just need to understand, who are you in Web3? And can you just continue being an extension of yourself from an online community to an on-chain community? So the type of briefs we're getting today are very different from what we used to get, let's say last year, because you'd see a lot of brands that are able to, let's say, put in a significant amount of investment in building their own worlds, that would scare a lot of this medium to smaller brands, thinking there's no way we can put in that money. And what is the ROI going to look like? But are you sure I need to move away from Instagram? So there was a lot of fear and uncertainty on that end. But this year onwards, we noticed that brands are aware that something is happening, that they need to be a part of it. And they're very open to actually reaching out to, for example, Hype, saying, hey, can you just help us navigate and build our Web3 strategy or Web3 roadmap? So that is one. And then you also have brands at the same time that simply say, listen, we are very happy with the channels that are working right now. We're not seeing a dip in sales. And that's what eventually matters to us, right? So we might just park this aside because we just don't have the bandwidth and the time or the budget to even look at it. And they are usually affected more with what they hear in the market or what they hear on news about crypto, which is not necessarily always the most positive. So this is where like the two buckets where the brands would fall.
Super interesting. And is there anything noticeably different about what types of companies they are? Like, is it bigger brands or like more established or anything like that in terms of those two camps?
Yes, definitely more established and bigger brands, household names, I would say mostly. And I would like to think that the reason that they're doing this is because they're scared of losing relevancy, right? As you see new generations kicking in, as you see more and more time being spent in the digital spaces, you want to make sure that you're future-proof. So how do you future-proof yourself is to constantly have an eye out saying, oh, okay, I need to penetrate into space A or space B.
That's also something that we talk about a lot is future-proofing. Just to clarify, it's big brands that are more fearful in terms of like maybe holding onto budget temporarily while they kind of watch the market.
It's actually the big brands that are taking those risks and at the same time are being risk-averse.
Oh.
If they're able to see a clear connection with their product.
Mm.
And maybe this is because of how it's been done historically. We still haven't seen seamless integration of tech. So for example, what we did at Lemonade last year is, so Budweiser had sponsored 2 to 3 festivals in India. And with Lemonade, when anyone signs up, we create you a custodial wallet that allows you to also move your assets back to a non-custodial wallet of yours. And then there were these IRL spaces, physical spaces, sorry, at the festivals, where you would go, you'd scan your Lemonade wallet, it will take a photo of you with Pollination's AI, it would quickly create an avatar at the festival, and it would paste it on like a Budweiser looking frame, digital frame, and you can instantly mint it and drop it into your Lemonade wallet. So you didn't really have to go and launch a PFP collection. All you had to do is understand, all right, you are already hanging out. You already have a community at, let's say, Festival X. What can I do at that festival that allows you to create a memorable event? In this case, you literally give over 5,000 people their first PFP. That's a crazy psychological attachment that people are going to have to their PFPs, because in their head, they're thinking, maybe I need, like, I don't know, $500,000 to get a PFP, because that's what it costs to get a blue chip NFT. But no, it's what kind of digital representation of yours do you have the most attachment to? And if you're at a festival having fun with your friends and you're able to go and just mint your own first digital avatar, which also has Budweiser's logo at the back, then you're thinking, oh, this is my memory. It's the same concept of wanting to save festival bands. I have all the festival bands I've ever been to since I was 16, because it's emotional attachment to it. But yeah, it's about finding opportunities in your existing activations rather than pushing the brand to say, let's do a super complicated NFT activation with the Dutch auction in there, and then the supply would decrease. And it's just, it's fun. The gamification is definitely fun. But if you're looking to onboard your existing community, then maybe the best way to go for it is to just penetrate into the spaces they are already hanging out in. In this case, if you're sponsoring a festival, then let's find out how can we do that.
That's super interesting. And I know you've also at Hype launched something called Hype DevRel, so like developer relations. I don't think you're necessarily driving that yourself because you're sort of marketing and innovation focused. But for anyone who doesn't know, what do we mean by developer relations? And I guess, what would you say that role is in Web3? Because it's probably a step removed from, say, big tech or even just sort of other startups, maybe.
Think of it more like developer marketing. So because in Web3, again, you go from validators all the way to builders who want to build on top of different protocols, essentially, every project is looking to attract more and more builders slash developers onto their protocol or their chain. So it's important to understand how do you market your product to developers who would be incentivized to build. Similarly, for a creator platform, you are thinking, how do you market to creators? You create different creator programs and accelerators to really incubate the best in class. It's the same concept, but for developers. And it is actually something that I'm very proud to talk about today, because usually when you would think about it of a developer, you wouldn't normally think of a woman. And then if someone who's heading developer relations, you would also not think of a woman. And actually, it's been head by someone who's very kick-ass at Hype. Her name is Kat. She's the one who's leading developer relations at Hype. And
Awesome. I love to hear that. What would you say have been your biggest learnings so far, whether at Hype or Lemonade or sort of more broadly in Web3?
Always stay agile. And you need to ditch your playbooks every 6 months. Because every 6 months, market changes, new projects come up, things are moving so fast. Your basic fundamental marketing will always remain the same. The four P's, like the Philip Kotler book that we would read, or your classic product marketing funnel, all the way from awareness to, you know, retention. That will always remain the same, because the people, we're still humans. You're still marketing it to human beings, right? So we essentially haven't changed. But it's just that what we do and how we do and where we hang out has changed. So your basics will be the same, but the fluffy part on top, that will constantly change. So you have to be very agile. You have to be okay to test and learn and fail multiple times. I've been very lucky with my co-founders at Lemonade and also with Jake at Hype for them to just be very, very, create like an environment that is okay for you to test, learn and fail. But as long as you can do that fast, learn and then move on to the next step is what's key. So I would say just constantly test and learn, ditch your playbooks every 6 months and try and keep your eyes open for what's next. Follow the right people, try to cut through the noise. If you follow the right people, and when I say follow, I mean like reading their blogs or reading their articles, reading their posts. It'll help you even understand in general how the trends are moving.
I love that. And are there any trends that you think people maybe aren't paying enough attention to at the moment?
Okay, so back in the days, we used to listen to music in cassettes, and then we went to LimeWire, and then we had Spotify. But you never really told your friend Lauren that, oh, hey, I want to go listen to offline music. Or, hey, I'm going to go listen to online music. No, I'm just going to go play something on Spotify. Or do you have the cassette of, I don't know, Britney Spears? But you never really said online or offline music. So I don't understand why people talk about, oh, I just bought a music NFT. People are going to stop saying that very soon. So the major trend that we're going to see, and it probably even started with Reddit and Starbucks, where they just completely let go of jargon. That's a trend that we're seeing a lot more with brands today, is that they want to let go of jargon as much as possible. And it's the same kind of analogy that I would never say about a music NFT. There will be a time in 5 years where you say, yeah, I just purchased Snoop Dogg's latest track. And it'll just happen to be on-chain, because that becomes a de facto. That's like the bigger trend that we're going to see.
And for anyone that isn't familiar with the Reddit NFTs, which are not called NFTs, do you want to give a little bit of background about that?
Yeah, they marketed as collectibles, which I think was super smart. Same with the Starbucks rewards program. They took their existing rewards program, put it on-chain, without really giving it any bigger name outside of, a rewards program. So we're going to see that.
I love that. I know you actually already come up with some great tips for people, but is there anybody else or anything else you would suggest either looking into or like specific people to follow or any like communities that you suggest that people dive into to kind of learn more about this space or where you've learned a lot?
This is a bit of a traditional book, has less to do with Web3, but has really helped me a lot, because it's an interesting journey, because Hype traditionally is has been a crypto marketing agency, right? For at least the last 5 years. And then now, kind of like opening an arm that allows traditional brands to come in and tap into our expertise of Web3, matched with Web2 marketeers as well in our team, it's what I would call it like a classic cold start problem. It's like starting a little mini business inside a bigger business of its own. And what's really helped me from my Lemonade days all the way down till today is Andrew Chen's book, The Cold Start Problem. Andrew Chen, absolutely love him. Today, he's a partner at Games Fund. But traditionally, he's been into product marketing, and he's invested in some of the top 10 tech startups that are today unicorns. So he has pretty much penned down his learnings from each of those companies, all the way from Uber to Clubhouse to Dropbox, as to how did each of these companies overcome their cold start problem and create the network effect that we all want to achieve from our products. That still continues to be my go-to source of inspiration. Every time I'm stuck, I go back, quickly read up a chapter on, let's say, Clubhouse. I'm like, oh, how did they do this? And then try to connect with how the community in Web3 reacts, and then bridge the two. And then that's how you kind of come up with, okay, this is how we kind of solve it. So that's still like my evergreen book at the moment for the last 3 years. And then in terms of people I follow, I love to follow people on Substack, as well as Every is another independent publishing arm. So I've been able to get a lot of insights from there. But yeah, I'm a reader in general. So I like to read. There could be people who love listening and they could probably follow their podcasts as well.
Amazing. I've just gotten a bad habit recently of listening to podcasts on like 1.25 speed, because I'm like, I need the insights faster. But like, well, I'm, you know, like just like putting the washing away or something. But it does... I do end up sometimes needing a break from it because people are talking so fast. Blah, 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 blah. And I don't think, I can't imagine that my voice sounds too good when it's on fast mode, because I think I already speak quite fast. But this has been a super interesting conversation. So lastly, where can people find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. I go by Pshita Kumar. That's probably the easiest way to find me. Yes.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me, Lauren.
Has been the Women of Web3 podcast. We're now at the end of season 2. Please do us a huge favor and give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps more people find the show. Do follow Women of Web3 on LinkedIn. That's where we post job vacancies, news, and learning resources. If you've got any questions or comments, just drop us a line or tweet us at Women of Web3 Co. And we'll see you soon for season 3.